This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Okay, I'm here with Melissa Battler, who is doing her PhD in planetary science and is a member of the CPSX. Could you just tell us a little bit more about what that actually is?
Yeah, absolutely. So CPSX is the Centre for Planetary Science and Exploration. It's a relatively new centre here at the University of Western Ontario. It came into existence just over a year ago. And it's made up of about 50 faculty members in research areas within all the various faculties on campus, so engineering, science, medicine, social sciences, arts, and is expanding. Like I said, it's new, so we're growing. There are currently about 25 graduate students as part of the program, and the program is actually offered through the departments of Earth Sciences and Physics and Astronomy within the science faculty. So those different students and professors do all kinds of research in about 10 different areas of planetary science and exploration. Like I said, mostly in physics and astronomy and earth sciences, but also biology, chemistry. It's a large engineering and space design component, so there's a lot going on.
Okay, and what is your particular research interest?
Well, I'm in the geology side of the program, so my particular area of interest is the bridge between geology and biology. So, often referred to as astrobiology, it's the study of life in the universe. But I am a trained earth scientist, so I come at it from the geology side of things. I'm looking at minerals and trying to figure out what they might tell us about potential life or past life in different environments.
So, well, yeah, past life maybe on the Earth, but how is this helping us study other planets?
Right, so my research right now does focus on the Earth, but what I do is I study environments on the Earth that are similar to Mars for one or more reasons. There are plenty of environments on the Earth that are actually similar to Mars. In fact, we've received images back from Mars, and we've seen areas that look very similar to different landforms on the Earth. So there are glacial landforms and fluvial landforms where water has flowed in the past. One area of interest is springs. It appears that there might be evidence of springs. So think sort of like Yellowstone Park, maybe, that kind of hot spring, but probably not so hot. But yeah, there are all kinds of different environments like that that we can go to study on the Earth, and maybe we don't fully understand them on the Earth yet, so it makes a lot of sense to learn as much as we can about them here on the Earth before we attempt to learn more about them on Mars. So that's sort of what I'm doing, and I am focusing on the spring environment, particularly springs in the Canadian High Arctic, because we have very cold temperatures there. The water is relatively cold as far as springs go, and it flows year-round despite the fact that temperatures drop to below minus 50 degrees Celsius. So temperatures can actually be kind of comparable to Mars, which is fairly rare on the Earth. So it's an exciting environment, very relevant analog site to study.
And what do we know about these places and on the Earth? Is there, yes, the water flows, but yeah. what is there in particular else?
Right. So the springs that I'm studying a couple of different sets. One in particular is unique on the Earth. We don't know of anywhere else like it. The waters flow up through salt domes, so diapirs, these areas of salt that have accumulated under the surface of the Earth. We don't know the exact nature of how the water is flowing up through them, but we do know that the water flows through about 400 to 600 meters of permafrost. So yikes, cold, mm-hmm. How is it flowing to the surface? But of course it's picking up all the salt from the salt domes. Mm-hmm. So just the same way that we salt our roads in the winter to, you know, keep the ice from forming, same idea with the springs. So the springs pick up so much salt. In fact, the salinity is about, there's about four times as much salt in some of these springs as there is in the ocean. Even more than that in some of them, a bit less than that in others. But yeah, really, really, really salty water. So it's staying liquid. Mm. And that's interesting, first of all, because there is evidence of potential salt deposits on Mars, so the same thing could have happened there. We know there's evidence of water having flowed on Mars, so we have water, salt, okay, so far, so good, similar. Permafrost as well, we do have permafrost all over the surface of Mars, permafrost being defined as ground that stays permanently frozen for 2 years or more, and maybe some amount of ground at the very top meter or two can thaw. That's okay, it's still permafrost if only that top couple of meters thaws during the summer season, but the definition of permafrost doesn't require that there be water there. So when I say permafrost, we often think of soil that has water frozen in it. That may or may not be true on Mars, but in any case, permafrost, water, salt, So why is that all? It's interesting, but why do I really care? I mentioned biology, so there are things living in these springs year-round. That's really interesting. So it's this extreme environment on the Earth. We can visually see evidence of these little microbial communities forming in these springs. They sort of latch onto different mineral deposits. So again, if you think of something like Yellowstone Park, picture that in your head, you know, those beautiful colors of mineral deposits that you see on the surface. We see a lot of those on at the spring site. It's on Axelheiberg Island, like I said, in the Canadian High Arctic. So it looks similar. The mineralogy, meaning the chemistry of the rocks there, it's not exactly the same, but it's quite similar. But we see microbes associated somehow with these minerals. We don't really understand the relationship. Is it a coincidence, or are they feeding off of each other somehow? We don't really know that yet. So that's where my research comes in. So this is all interesting because we have seen evidence of, even more interesting, because we've seen evidence of similar possible types of mineral deposits on Mars. So if they were put in place by these springs through groundwater flowing up through salt and the permafrost, maybe there's some relation to life in those springs as well. So need to understand them better on the Earth before we can make conclusions about Mars.
So what maybe you're trying to do is identify those places on Mars mm-hmm. where we have a good chance of finding evidence of life.
Exactly. Yep, that's right. So another way to think about it is we're planning some more missions to Mars, some robotic missions in the like within the next decade, and some sample return missions as well. And the focus of most of these missions, if not all, is to look for evidence of life on Mars. People are very interested in that very, very fascinating philosophical idea of life elsewhere in the universe. That's what drives me. That's why I'm here. Ultimately, that's why I got into science, was I wondered, you know, are we alone, right? Like many people do. So this is one way to hopefully get at that question. Maybe some of my results will direct landing sites for future missions. Maybe we can go to some of these potential spring sites on Mars if they do prove to be as interesting as I think they might be. And yeah, maybe it'll lead to the first evidence of potential past, or who knows, maybe even present life on Mars.
And just to take a step back, something that's been a slight question in my mind, where do the salt domes come from under the surface of the Earth?
Right. So on the surface of the Earth, we get salt deposits forming, even present day, where we have water evaporating. Right. So we also sometimes call them evaporite deposits. These evaporite minerals, usually from the evaporation of salty water, so like seawater, right? So we know we have the salt in the seawater. There are other components in the seawater as well that when that water evaporates, it leaves behind these minerals. So over time, when you have a lot of evaporation happening happening over a large area, you get a lot of salt settling on the surface. It can accumulate, it can become thick, and even if it doesn't, what happens is it becomes buried over time, so your ocean dries up. We're talking large, large periods of time, thousands, millions of years, and yeah, eventually more sediments might come in and bury that salt, so it'll eventually be buried deep underground. And then when you have tectonic activity, so movement along faults, mountain building type of activity, you can get the salt moving. The salt is very low density, so it'll flow like toothpaste underground, right, through these layers of rock, and it flows. And on Axelheiberg, what has happened is there's been this period of mountain building activity, and the salt has kind of squished its way. You can't see, I'm totally talking with my hands right now. But the salt has squished its way through these faults and sort of pushed itself up towards the surface of the Earth. It wants to get back up again, right? It's very, very light. It's much lighter than the surrounding rocks. So yeah, it accumulates in these blobs, and there are lots of hills on Axelheiberg Island that just look like regular hills or mountains, but they're made out of diapirs. In this case, the core of that diapir is where the salt is, and the surrounding minerals are mostly gypsum, which is a common mineral on the Earth, but it's commonly found in diapirs and also formed from those same minerals that have evaporated from seawater evaporation. So that's sort of how they get there. And yeah, the water's flowing back up through them again and picking up those same minerals again, we think.
And so the evidence of minerals that we see on Mars, is it possible that the same thing has happened before Mars became, well, as we see it, fairly dead?
Right. Yeah, so the evidence that we think we're seeing is probably quite old. So there was a period of time on Mars very long ago when we think a lot of this water was flowing. There could have been oceans on the surface of Mars. We're still not really sure, but that would have been a very long time ago. And it's possible. It is possible that some kind of large body of water could have evaporated and could have left behind a large-scale salt deposit in the same way. We don't see evidence of that same tectonic activity, so the mountain-building processes. We don't see evidence of that on Mars, but in any case, like I said, the salt will sort of flow and try to come up to the surface if it's been buried. So we call that salt tectonics, actually. Salt can move without even being associated with other tectonic activity. That's why it's so extremely concentrated on Axel Heiberg, because it's a combination of the two. But other places on the Earth, you get salt domes forming just because the salt wants to get up. So, yep, I think it could have possibly happened on Mars. Don't really have a lot of evidence to back that up, but I don't see why not.
That's fair enough. And if I can ask for one small thing, which you won't have any evidence for as yet, but you say you got into science because of the possibility of life elsewhere in the universe.
Uh-huh.
Do you think we're alone?
No, I don't. No, I think it's just such a fascinating idea to find life elsewhere. Contact was one of those movies that really inspired me when I was a lot younger, the idea of finding intelligent life elsewhere in the universe. We have absolutely no evidence of that. Who knows? I'd like to think there is, but in terms of finding microbes within our solar system on other planets that had a similar climate to Earth back in their history, yeah, I think it's definitely possible that we could find life right here in our own solar system neighborhood. Well, so far, NASA's mantra has been follow the water. So that's NASA being one of the leaders in astrobiology in the world. And the other space agencies, of course, it makes sense. Everyone agrees. We're all on the same page here, but we're following the water because everywhere on the Earth where you find water, we now know that pretty much everywhere that we've looked, we found life. So in the most arid deserts on the Earth, in the most extreme environments, extreme cold in Antarctica, people are finding these extremophiles, so these microbes that can survive extremely harsh conditions. And sometimes there will be no evidence of life whatsoever until you get, like, that 1 centimeter of rainfall a year or whatever. And right after that rainfall, boom, life just appears everywhere. So wherever there's water, there's life. So on Mars, we want to look in places where there was probably water in the past. So there are certain areas on Mars that have more or less evidence than other areas. Mm. You want to find the water. And also heat helps a lot. Mm. Things grow faster when they have a bit of heat. So a lot of people around here at Western and CPSX are looking at impact craters. That's another very good location to look because you have that heat source generated when you have a large impactor colliding with the surface of another planet. So you have a giant asteroid or something colliding with the surface of Mars. There's lots of melting happening. The rocks, they're completely melting, generating all this heat. And when they punch into the surface of Mars, if there was water underground or on the surface or whatever, it's going to heat it up. And yeah, it could create a potential new habitat or accelerate growth and obliterate life in some areas. But accelerate growth in maybe proximal areas. I'm not exactly sure. No one, people are studying this now, but obviously we haven't found the life on Mars yet, so we're not sure. Impact craters are a good place to look because you have the heat and the water. The springs are obviously of interest to me because you have the water, although maybe not as much heat. So those are a couple of areas to look right now. There's also areas on Mars where, well, in general, on Mars, the atmospheric pressure is very low, and it's carbon dioxide, so it's toxic to us. We can't breathe on the surface of Mars, but in theory, some type of plant that takes in carbon dioxide could survive on the surface. But the problem is the extremely low atmospheric pressure on the surface combined with radiation on the surface. So it's not extremely likely that we'd find life right on the surface, just anywhere on Mars, especially not at high altitudes where the atmosphere is even thinner and you have even more radiation. But if you go, say, underground or deep within a canyon. So Valles Marineris, if you're familiar with it, it's a very large, it's like the Grand Canyon of Mars, except for it's the length of North America. So it's huge. It's this gigantic canyon, and it's very deep at the bottom. So maybe the bottom of the canyon, there's also a very deep impact crater that is even deeper than Valles Marineris, where it would be a good place to look for life. Some people I've heard maybe there's evidence of, like, that water could exist at those pressures. So so liquid water is the key for finding life. We don't find life in the ice on Earth, just in, like, water droplets within the ice. So that, and then, potential caves or lava tubes is the other place that I'm particularly interested in. So we have giant volcanoes on Mars. Olympus Mons is the largest volcano in the solar system. Huge. And so it's a very tall mountain, right? So on the surface at the top, like I said, maybe not such a good place to look. But there are lava tubes associated with this volcano, much like we see lava tubes around volcanoes on the Earth, like Iceland and Hawaii. So these are other places where I might want to go to do some research someday. But these lava tubes, they're underground, and there might, in the past, there was definitely heat associated with these environments, right? So you have your heat, you're protected from the radiation. If there was water, that could be a good place as well. So there are actually quite a few places on Mars that I would really like to just send humans and go look everywhere. We can. The rovers are great. They've returned so much good information. We've learned an awful lot about Mars, but humans are much more efficient explorers, so I would really like to see a human team get there as soon as possible, and I'll volunteer.
Well, are there any active volcanoes on Mars right now?
Nope.
Or Martian? No.
They're not active that we know of, but there is an awful lot of methane that we know is being released, so that could be related to a number of things. There are a lot of different processes that release methane on the Earth and possibly on Mars as well. Some of them are associated with biology, so that could be interesting. Some of them are definitely not, even on the Earth. Some of them are related to decay of organic matter and whatever. So, but there is a lot of methane released with volcanic eruptions on the Earth, so that's, I don't know. I don't know if that's evidence of any kind of current volcanic activity. Not likely, because it's recently generated methane. But no, they're not active right now. But I don't know an awful lot about them. I think there's a possibility. Maybe I like to think they're just dormant. But I don't really know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Melissa Battler. Thank you very much for coming on the Jodcast.
You're very welcome. It was fun.
Thank you.